Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 305. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. We've talked a lot of baseball, a little bit of NBA news that I find fascinating because I think we're all fans. If you're an NBA fan, I think we're all fans of TNT's Inside the NBA. It's like it is the quintessential kind of sports panelist studio show. And obviously for the last year, we have been finding out that Amazon had made an enormous offer to the NBA and that this upcoming season would probably be the last one where TNT had the contract with the NBA. Therefore, Inside the NBA would no longer be a show. And, you know, with Ernie Kenny, Charles, and Shaq, which is just, you know, a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun. Sometimes it's not always the best of analysis. Sometimes it's more just, well, even if it is, you go there for the goofiness sometimes. And how great Charles and Shaq can be. But it sounds like, as of right now, even though the entire end of the season, and especially Charles Barkley, made it seem like it was a fait accompli that it was over, I think he even said that he would not do TV anymore once this deal was consummated, that this would be his last year, and he's not going to like go somewhere else and continue to be a NBA analyst. It sounds like that TNT has filed the paperwork to match the enormous contract that Amazon had offered the NBA for the rights to basketball games. Even with the poison pill, or at least Amazon thought the poison pill would be, to pay up front for 3 years. But apparently the company that owns TNT has figured out a way to get credit for that and have even matched that. So as of right now, it sounds like TNT has matched the offer, or at least they have matched the offer. We're seeing reports that the NBA prefers the Amazon offer for whatever reason and would rather not take the TNT offer, so there might be some lawsuits filed. But hopefully we have an opportunity of still seeing Inside the NBA, still seeing Shaq and Charles and Kenny and Ernie, because I think it is pretty much as good a national pre- and post-game show that there is. I mean, it's become its own thing. And as much as no one cares where we watch the games necessarily, although I know many people don't want to go to Amazon, and don't even bring this up, because then we'll get into baseball and how many different apps and streaming services you need to watch a damn Yankee season. It's on Roku. What the hell is Roku? How do I get Roku? I have no idea. Honey, text him. Ask him how I get Roku. Never even heard of this damn thing. Ah, who cares? They suck anyway. Can't watch this garbage. Yeah, they're doing me a favor. Tell them to put all the games on Roku. I can't even watch these bums. Damn Brian Cashman can't put together a damn team riding on the coattails of Watson and Gene Stick Michael. You're going to tell me one chance. Ain't one damn thing without the court four. It's nonsense. All right-handed. He loves the right-handed hitters. I don't even want to watch him. Put all the games on Roku. I don't care. And put the post game on Roku, too, so I don't have to hear Aaron Boone talk his nonsense. It's all right in front of us. It's all right. Oh, shut up. I'm so tired of this guy. Take a long walk off a short pier, Boone. I'm so tired. I hope everything's on Roku. I can't take this anymore. No, yes, seriously, text him. I want to find out how to get to Roku. Yes, I'm venting, honey. Yes, I still want to find out how to get the damn game. I wish I could leave him. Believe me, I'd be happier if I wasn't a Yankee fan. Need this in my life. I got enough grief. I'm married to you. I'm just kidding, honey. I love you. You know I'm kidding. I know. Yes, please still make me a sandwich. Yes, thank you. I love you. Yes, with the potato chips on it, like I like it. You're the best. Love you, honey. I'm not sure what just happened there, but I had some fun. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. But that's how we, you know, you're going to have to watch it on Amazon or whatever else. You have to just adapt. But hopefully TNT will still have it because I do think the show is tremendous. I love Charles Barkley. I love him and Shaq going at it. I love racing to the screen. I love all the different stupid stuff they do. It is a funny show. It's become part and parcel of watching national NBA games. And hopefully they can figure it out, because who the hell wants to, you know, go back to Amazon for another thing? Although you all have it. The Amazon one really bothers me, I have to admit. I get it. I get my fictional character there exists. I understand that. But, like, it's just, everyone has Amazon. Like, everybody. We've had it for years because of the two-day shipping. Everyone had Amazon before they even had a streaming service. You live on Amazon. Who doesn't have Amazon? If you don't have Amazon, go sign up for it. The shipping on its own. I mean, when do you? Who knows? Who knows when you are going to need like a Mickey Mouse playing card deck, and you need it in 2 days. You never know when that's going to be necessary. And if you order it within the next 5 hours, it could be here tomorrow. Like, you got to have Amazon. 888-808-1019. But yes, the Subway Series is tonight. Football arrives today. We got the Hard Knocks tonight. Looking forward to it. Finally get to see that draft room. And for all you Daniel Jones lovers and all you guys who told me they don't have any interest in quarterbacks, Daniel Jones is the guy. Well, we'll see tonight. I saw in the preview, I saw Coach Dable's face when they suggested trading up. Well, do you think you trade up for Daniels? Oh, yes, 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 I would. The guy couldn't get the words out fast enough. And apparently, his comments about running the 40 has sparked a bunch of controversy around here at the station. I was unaware of this. I was on vacation, as I said. And I'll tell you why it was ruined every day. But apparently, the idea of Dabes running the 40 and the time, and it came out who would run the fastest 40 here at the station. And if anybody suggested anybody but Tiki Barber, you're all nuts. I'm very confused how that's not the obvious answer. The guys, I watched him run for 200 plus yards against the Kansas City Chiefs. I saw it with my own eyes. What are you guys talking about? Have you ever seen Tiki Barber? I'm not sure if he paints his clothes on, to be totally honest with you. The guy is in tremendous shape. And we go to the softball game. He's running all over the place, making diving catches. Tiki Barber would smoke anybody associated with this building, let alone in it. But Dable, I think, could run the 40 a hell of a lot faster now than he could when that was filmed during the Underwear Olympics, because he's lost a ton of weight. He looks great. God bless him. And he's got a tan going. Dable look, you know, a lot of coaches, it's funny, because a lot of coaches, now I know I joked about this a couple weeks ago, about how when Rex Ryan lost the weight, he kind of lost his mojo and the team went downhill. Most coaches and people who have these kind of stressful jobs just look at the White House. You don't come out better than when you went in. You know? You just don't. You don't come out better than when you went in. And that's not even just Biden. Obama came out with all gray hair. These stressful jobs, and make no mistake, an NFL head coaching job is on the top of the list of dedication. You're there all night long, all day long, the pressure, the dealing with 53 players, dealing with a million coaches, dealing with all this stuff, like trying to put together a game plan week to week. I mean, let's be honest, like compare it to any other sport for the most part. Like the NBA, you might come up with a different game plan for a different opponent, maybe. But, you know, guard this guy, guard that guy. But ultimately, you run your offense, you do your things. Like football can be, and you run your offense in football too, but it can be, and this is what really the legacy of Bill Belichick is. Bill Belichick's legacy for me as a head coach is, yes, the winning clearly and everything, but it's also the chameleon nature that the Patriots took on where, you know, prior to Bill and the Patriots, it was kind of just you did what you do and you went out there and tried to beat the guy in front of you and the team in front of you. You played your offense, you played your defense, you did what you did, and you tried to outmaneuver the other guy and then, you know, and outplay the other guy and out-talent the other guy and the other team. And really, Bill was the one who pioneered the idea of going into every single week and changing who you were based on your opponent. And now that's become such part and parcel of what the NFL is. It's impossible to be a coach. These game plans that go into all this stuff. I mean, baseball, you know, you at the beginning of a series, you go over the pitching. You go over all their pitchers and some of the ways they try and attack you. But that's it. You play baseball. You pitch, you hit. You might you attack certain areas on certain hitters, maybe, but for the most part, like, the manager doesn't have the kind of pressure and game planning, and they play the game. After the game, you have a beer, you go home. Football, after the game, you're there for 12 hours going over every single play on film. And I mean, it's just going over the other teams that you're going to play next week's last two games on film. Like, you're there for 24 hours watching film, sleeping on the couch, eating takeout. And so the idea that I'm happy for him, because I promise you, at the end of the year, Brian Daboll is not going to look the same. I bet you Brian Daboll puts on a bunch of poundage during the season, because just how do you stay healthy? We can have a personal chef making you keto meals. Oh, man, I wish I could. It's the first thing I would do if I hit the lottery. Personal chef in the house. Not anybody too good looking either. That's the kind of stuff that happens to you when you win the lottery. You win the lottery, you hire a personal chef. Next thing you know, your wife and the personal chef are asking for half the money so they can go to, you know, where, Antigua, because he's going to open up a restaurant. That's the last thing you need. I can see that coming a mile away. 888-808-1019. So I might as well tell you now about the vacation. And here's the thing. I want you to understand this. I see my children all the time. The best thing about my schedule, honestly, I get no sleep. I talk, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. The commute is a good part, I guess, ultimately. I mean, it's still a long commute for me living where I live, but no traffic. I park right on front of the building, so that's good. But ultimately, every moment that my kids are awake and not at school, I'm with them. So I see my kids way more than I ever have. With when I was doing afternoons and I was leaving, I was dropping them off at school and then I wouldn't be back until bedtime practically. I would see them in the morning for 20 minutes, drop them off, and then I would, you know, kiss them goodnight on the forehead as they were getting tucked in at 8:30, 8:45 at night. Now I see them a ton. So when I had a staycation where my wife is working this summer, my kids are at camp, I had these visions of grandeur of playing golf every day. I was going to go to the batting cage, maybe check out a movie by myself, do all these things. I was going to do things. That's what I was going to do with my staycation, have a little me time, do fun things, go to an arcade by myself without the kids, just do whatever, hang out by my community as a pool, hang out by the pool, listen to Jimmy Buffett and the sun. That's what I was going to do. And every day, something happened that robbed me of that. Every day. Two of those days, it was too hot for my son's camp, and they closed half day. I dropped him off at 9, come pick him up at 12 o'clock. That's 3 hours. What am I going to do in 3 hours? Can't get a hamster on a wheel in 3 hours. What am I going to do? Can't go to the pool and relax. Can't go to the bat. I guess I could sneak in a quick batting cage. I can go play 9 or something, hit the driving range, but I'm not going to go play golf. I'm not going to have a full round of golf and enjoy myself. Those were two of the days that the freaking weather was not, and it wasn't rain, it was just hot. It was too hot to have the kids running around playing kickball or tennis baseball. That's what he's been playing, tennis baseball, whatever that is. I mean, it's probably not that hard to understand. He hits, instead of a baseball bat, he has a racket. So that was two of the days. Then on Friday, my mother begged me to take her somewhere where it's about a half-hour drive. She doesn't like driving on the parkways. Up by me, there's really no It's not like in Long Island where I grew up or Queens where she grew up. You know, you take Lefferts Boulevard onto Queens Highway. Like, there's traffic lights. No, for us, it's just you get on the parkway and you drive on the highway and the speed limit's 65 miles an hour. She's uncomfortable, so I got to take her somewhere on Friday. Ruined my day. And I understand. I love my mother. And I'm happy to do it for her. I didn't tell her no, but, you know, it's my vacation. I had that. Then I had a pop-up doctor's appointment that I forgot all about right in the middle of the day, 2:30. Just every day there was something that was right smack dab in the middle of the day preventing me from living the summer of George. I was right there. This is what I was supposed to do. I don't get a lot of vacation time. Probably more than most, but, you know. I was going to have a wonderful week of just me all alone by myself. And it never came to fruition. It just didn't happen. And then, plus, as I told you, I split my nose open, and the thing still can't stop bleeding. I went into the bathroom today. Hadn't had a Band-Aid on it all day. Hadn't had a Band-Aid on it all day. Feeling good about it. Think it's finally over. Scabbed up. I go into the bathroom. When I get here, it's trickling down my nose. I got to put on some, you know, I got to go to the first aid kit here and put on a Band-Aid. Because the stupid glasses, all it takes is to move the glasses the wrong way, and it rips it open. It's like right where my glasses sit. Because the kid was jumping on my head. Carlos Rodon pitched well yesterday. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We'll come back. Take your phone calls on the Subway Series. If you can relate to me on having what was supposed to be some alone time that got ruined. A full week of it. Not just a day. It's not like I had one day planned. It's like, hey, what are you going to do? I had a full week, all 5 days. Something happened. Then one of the days I had to wait and let the guy in to take back the dunk tank that was dropped off for the block party on Saturday. And it was like, it never ends. It never ends. There's always something.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 327, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Another fun thing that, you know, I tried to throw in Fleeleman's face, but he wasn't having it. He doesn't seem to care. Eminem, my guy. Big Eminem fan, along with the Beatles. I know that's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, but I love them both. His new album, The Death of Slim Shady, has debuted at number one and has knocked off the great Taylor Swift from her album being number one for the last, 12 weeks? 12 consecutive weeks. She had the number one album in the country. Eminem has now knocked her off. His new album is now number one. And just as football season's getting ready, so she's going to have to come up with something. I wonder if this sparks her. That's my thought. My thought is now she's like, okay, damn. I got Eminem, who's like the artist of the century, apparently. You know, he's sold more albums than anyone since 2000. He just knocked me off the top. I'm supposed to try and catch the Beatles here with the longest number one. And I got to figure out something. So could you see a breakup on the way? That's what concerns me. Because if she breaks up with Kelsey, I mean, the ultimate song. Everybody would wait. Yeah, that's got to be a weird thing now that I think about it. Like, everybody, and I think, what's her name has this too? The other singer. Hello, it's me, Adele. Where, like, literally, we're all waiting for the breakup so we can hear the song. Like, and if there is a breakup or something happens, that's what if I were to text my wife right now at 3:29 in the morning and said, breaking news, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce just broke up. I honestly believe her response would be, can't wait for the song. I think that's like when your personal life, when you dive so much into it, where it's literally like, I just saw the list too, like Jake Gyllenhaal, established, you know, created this song. And when she brought Dear John is based after John Mayer. And this, like, every single song she has, or I shouldn't say every single song, but so many of the songs she has are, like, dedicated to relationships that you know. I mean, she probably already has one. Does she have one on this album that is kind of towards Kelsey Fleegs?
More than one.
Look at that. But they're not as good as the breakup. The breakup is where the pain comes. And without great pain, there can be no great talent. Everybody knows that. That's why I'm such a Yankee fan, because they've caused me so much pain over the years, you idiots. So much pain compared to other franchises. You're nuts. And again, you know, I just got another tweet about Aaron Boone and his post game. So the worst ever. Like, anyone who gets hung up on Aaron, I'll never understand it. I just don't. To me, the only post games that matter necessarily are football, because it's once a week and it's literally about game planning issues and what went wrong and how did this happen. Like, I know baseball, it's about what went wrong and how did this happen, but it's like, you know, it's pretty much Gleyber stinks. What do you want? Like, that's what you want. You want your pound of flesh. You want the manager to get out there and say, this guy stinks. This guy sucks. You know, this was a disaster. And they're going to talk up their players. In football, what do you get? I got to watch. I got to see the play. Yeah, I got to watch the film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I haven't talked to the doctor yet. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know if you would say we gave up on the run, but, you know, that's what our defense was kind of showing. These post games, they're so overblown. I don't know why we get so involved in the minutiae of exact. We get it. Aaron Boone defends his players. That's what he does. And yet we still get so hung up on the nonsense. It's about winning and losing. And I know I joked about him being, you know, the 600 win percentage. And I guess I think he's probably just under now after being 500 and losing two out of the next three. But it is a lot of winning. Like, you have to just be aware that it's a lot of winning. That's all. It's not giving him any prizes or anything, but it's just this. When you have that kind of record, like, Boone won a lot of games, 18 over 100 wins, 19 over 100 wins. 21, 92 wins, 22, 99 wins, like, every year. And you can't say Brian Cashman's done a terrible job and Aaron Boone's done a terrible job when they won. Like, we don't consider any, like, the regular season's meaningless, and yet we're screaming about it. Like, that, and that's the other contradiction that just drives me nuts. So who cares about what is a 600 win? Like, I saw a bunch of people say, what does a 600 win percentage get you, in response to my sarcastic tweet that nobody gets? What does a 600 win percentage get you, huh? How many rings? Oh, the ring for that must be great. Oh, what kind of championship do you get for winning 600 percentage? Oh, yeah. Who cares? No rings. Regular season manager. Well, then what the hell are we complaining about right now? Then why are we hung up on this game or that game? When they get to the playoffs, then his job starts. Then why do we care so much about the reliever he brings in April? Why are we on him for that if we don't care about wins and losses during the regular season? Like, that's the other contradiction. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. 600 win. Oh, great. Great. So he's won some regular season games. Can't win the big one. Well, then why are we yelling about every single decision he makes over the course of the regular season if all we care about is how he performs in the postseason? Why do we care? And if it's just, oh, he can't win the big one, you want me to list I can start listing every single manager under the sun that you think is better than Aaron Boone, who has a worse playoff record or hasn't won the big one. Starting with Buck Showalter, I guarantee you, I could pull every single baseball fan in the city. They'll tell me Buck Showalter is a better manager. What'd he win? In fact, how many teams won the second he left? Got the Yankees win the World Series the next year? Diamondbacks win the World Series the next year? I guess Bob Brenly's a better manager. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Liam in Blue Point. What's up, Liam?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Doing all right. Just want to talk about Rondon and his start today.
Yes.
You know, as much as a fan as like not much as a fan as I am of him, he pitched pretty well today. I think he needed that start.
Oh, desperately.
It's good to see him getting back in a somewhat of a groove, though, even though it's just one game. But need him to pick it up for real, and didn't see much moping either, so that was good to see.
Well, I mean, he was winning, and I think you could argue it's his best start in a Yankee uniform. That's how quickly the at bats went. Like he didn't struggle getting the. He had 10 strikeouts, which is I believe it's his career high for the Yankees. He's you know, he got rid of batters quickly. He got swing and misses on his sliders. He mixed up his sequence. He threw a lot of curveballs more than he typically does. He threw more changeups than he typically does. The fastball didn't get hit really hard at all, other than the home run. I thought it was as good a start as he's had. Now, I completely agree with you. I am far, far, far away from having real confidence in Carlos Rodon. He has to show me more than one start. And honestly, like the more I think about it, I'm not sure what he could do. Like, between now and, say, game 3 of the ALDS, like, say that's where they get. Between now and game 3 of the ALDS, the series is tied at 1, he's starting game 3. I don't know if there's anything he can do from now until then to make me feel really good about Rodon on that mound. Like, he would have to be almost perfect throughout the rest of the year, and I still would kind of have question marks about him in a big spot.
Yeah, I don't know if I really trust that series side scenario. That would be a little scary and sketchy to me.
Yeah, but I mean, you very well could see it. He's going to, unless he really just is awful, awful, if he's the same guy he's been for the last 5 starts consistently the rest of the way, then he might not pitch in the postseason. But if he's just up, even if he's up and down, pitching to a 4.5 ERA, the money he makes, the stuff he has, he's going to pitch in the postseason.
Yeah, he's got it. But, like we were saying, it's just hope this good start is kind of like a boost for him, cheers him up a little bit, and gets him on the right path.
Yeah, I mean, listen, hopefully it was. It's not, you know, it was a big game. That's a series you can't lose if you're the Yankees. It's a series you can't lose. You can't come out of the All-Star break after having lost that final game the way they did, with Volpe blowing the ground ball and Verdugo falling down. You can't win 2 out of 3, end it like that, and then come out and lose 3 out of 4 to Tampa Bay at home. I mean, I really wanted 3 out of 4, but you can't lose 3 out of 4. That was an important start, an important game. And like so many other things, I continue to say this, and it's so true. You can tell exactly how a Yankee game's going by the first 2 innings. I watch a lot of Mets. I try and watch a lot of baseball. Like, really no other team, the Yankee game plays out to the script that is written in the first 2 innings. If the pitcher gives up 2, it doesn't have to be like a game-changing number. It could be 2 runs. Pitcher gives up 2 runs in the first inning, there's a really good chance the Yankees aren't winning. And not that they can't score 2, but it's not going to just end at 2. They're going to keep tacking on later in the game. Like, that's just how it works. If the Yankees throw up zeros, they seem to continue to throw up zeros. If they give up 2 runs in the first inning, there'll be 2 more in the fourth and then 3 in the seventh. Like, that's just how it's gone. And if the Yankees don't come through with runners in scoring position in the first couple innings, it sets the tone for the offense. Like, I was much happier yesterday's game, having Littell, or whatever his name was, striking out the side in the first inning. I would rather see 3 consecutive strikeouts, then a walk, a base hit, and then a strikeout and a pop up. You know, I'd rather see that than I'd rather see just vip, vip, vip right through it, like a hot knife through butter, looking like an ace, looking like the Yankees can't sniff them, than to leave a runner stranded at third. Because that is so demoralizing and gets right into the crux of the problem with this offense, and they feel it. And the rest of the game plays out that way. So if they give up runs early on, more runs are coming and the Yankees will never catch up. If they leave runners on base in the first 2-3 innings, offense will never come through the rest of the game. It's unbelievable how these games are predicated on what happens in the first 2 or 3 innings. And I'm telling you right now, when Rodon got out of that first inning as easily as he did, I said, hey, he's got a chance to have a good start here. That's how impactful watching the Yankees over this year, the first 2 innings have meant to me, watching the games. The first 2 innings tell the whole damn story. It's bizarre. Rocco, what's up, Rocco?
How you doing, Chris? How you doing?
Good.
Buddy?
How's the toga?
Oh, the toga's rocking now. You know, the people are around.
Yeah, a busy time at the toga. Getting ready for August.
Oh, yeah, it's getting ready, but they're racing already. So people are coming in. Oh, yeah. Racing started last week. Because they have dark days on Monday and Tuesday now, so they run the season longer. They started in July and then all the way to the beginning of September. So we'll be rocking and rolling the whole time.
All right. Sounds good.
Hey, Chris, at least the wife didn't leave you to-do list, the honey to-do list when you were... You know, that could have been worse.
She knows I don't do. She knows I'm not good to do things. But I mean, I had a couple of things I was supposed to do. I did have to go to Lowe's to purchase something, but I didn't use it yet. I purchased it, so I'm ready to go. I haven't done it yet. But yes, no, you're right. I could have had a honey to do list. No, she knew that it was my vacation, but I ended up, and that's the worst part of it because that was my allotted time. I don't get that back. I don't get, hey, you know, I need another day off to do nothing. You're right. Then the next time it's like, you got to do things. You had your week and you blew it.
That's right, Chris. Hey, I think you shouldn't take your vacation next time, you know? Just, you might as well come to work. It's more relaxing for you, it sounds like, you know?
Yeah, well, listen, I did catch up on sleep. The one thing I'll say about the staycation is I had some early bedtimes. I had plenty of, a couple of nights of the martini instead of just the traditional Friday. But I did get some sleep, though. And so I was in bed like a couple of nights by 10 o'clock, and I slept from 10 to 7, which is unheard of in my life.
That's right. So you actually got to sleep over the night. All right.
I did have a week of trying to catch up on some sleep. That at least did come to fruition. I did get some sleep.
You had a mini vacation when you were asleep.
I had a relaxing, less fun vacation than I wanted, but I did do the relaxing.
There you go. So there was something worthwhile. Hey, Chris, Kane, how about Jet fans? Really, you being sarcastic with the Yanks, come on. But the Jet fans, when's the last time they won? 69. 69. No one's gone that long.
No one's gone a Baker's dozen years like they have without making the playoffs. It's unbelievable, this Jet franchise, and that's why it's so imperative to win. It's not just about winning. And thank you for the call, Rocco. Obviously, it's about winning, but it's about Fliegelman and I talked about it when we were talking about Rodgers, and we're talking about the perception. And no matter what the Jets did, they were wrong because they're the Jets. And for a long time, the Patriots, whatever they did was right because they're the Patriots. There's a perception, and perception's reality. And the reality is the Jets are losers. That's the reality. The reality is the Jets are losers who can do nothing right. And until they change that, they don't get the benefit of the doubt on stuff like this. They don't get the benefit of the doubt on anything. Something comes up. Other organizations could brush it aside as no big deal. For the Jets, what a disaster. Here we go. It's the freaking Jets. Only the Jets. It could happen to 10 other franchises. It won't be as big a deal for them. Based on the market, depending on the market, it could be that we care more in New York. But for the most part, it'll be, the Jets. How did they? How only the Jets. And instead, it should be. They should be able to breathe every once in a while, deal with some... whatever popped up, and not feel like, oh, my God, what a disaster. Woody's a mess. Like, that's what it is, because they've been terrible. It's not just the longest streak in the AFC East. It's not just the longest streak in the NFL. It's the longest streak in professional sports. It needs to end. And they need to back it up with another season of going to the playoffs so that they feel like a franchise that has some stable footing and is actually not just a disaster and a joke of a franchise. And now they do it to themselves sometimes, and sometimes it's bad luck. Rodgers going down 4 plays in. I mean, that's just Jetsian. But that's as much as actually winning and having a fan base enjoy playoff games and why, like, they just need to become a legitimate franchise, because so much of the feeling is it's destined to go wrong, LOL Jets, all that nonsense, because they constantly, their most popular moment of the last 10 years is a butt bumble. Like, that's what it is. They need something to wash this all away. They need to wash their butt.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Five back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right. And the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 350, so every once in a while, I get my fat ass out of this chair and I go for a walk or whatever, and I walked in to talk to my man Fliegelman on the other side, you know, a little companionship, see what's going on. He had no time for me. He's on the phone, screening phone calls, talking to Eric, apparently, who I'm going to get to in a second. And they brought up something I wanted to mention, I guess, because I don't know why. This also goes to one of the things I can't explain. I don't know why. I have zero interest in the new Wolverine Deadpool movie. I don't know why. It seems up my alley on some level. I like the Deadpool movies for the most part, but maybe it's the way it's being, like the way that's being portrayed, or the way that it's like as like this buddy thing, like. From two different, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I know they fought at the end, right? Is that supposed to be, was that Deadpool or is that someone else who fights him at the end of the old movie when he had no mouth? And
well, so that's like a different version of Deadpool in the first Wolverine spinoff movie that was correct. Atrocious.
Yes.
One of the most like panned superhero movies of all time.
Right.
Yes, a version maybe that's of Deadpool why, yeah, fought
maybe,
Wolverine.
Right. Maybe that's why I don't, but. I don't know what it is. It's like they're doing the Heineken commercials. He's wearing like the real old comic book looking colors of Wolverine. And I don't know why, but they were talking about it. I guess you're excited to go see it?
Oh, of course. We Eric and I are both big into all the superhero and comic book stuff. But this is one, like if you're a fan of these two characters, like you said, you liked the two Deadpool movies, like when they finally got the character right.
Yeah.
This is what, or at least it appears to be, this is what a movie with the two of them is supposed to be like, what people were furious about that we didn't get 15 years ago.
Right.
And you're getting Wolverine in the comic book costume for the first time on screen. Because as legendary as Hugh Jackman's portrayal has been in the movies, obviously, you know, it's the black outfit.
More
the,
gritty, like, it's, right, real
which fit
type
for
thing.
The early 2000s. But this is a chance for people to finally get to see, like, if you're a comic book fan,
right?
There he is,
and
in that outfit.
And these two characters are in a lot of comic books together, Deadpool and Wolverine, obviously. Or?
Yeah, and then you also have the added impact of Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds are like great friends, so them bringing that chemistry to the movie.
We'll see. I mean, listen, I'm not opposed to it. I thought when I say no interest, that's probably not fair. I thought I would have much more interest. I thought I'd be much more excited about it.
If it's a success. And you hear for a couple weeks after, oh, this is amazing, this is amazing, you know, it's making $1 billion. At that point, will you say, okay, I'll go see it?
Yeah, maybe. I got to be honest, I scrolled right through. I usually go to IMDb for looking for stuff. I didn't even play the trailer. I don't know what it is. Just not. I gotta check it out.
Well, the trailer also, though, is giving you, like, they're giving you nothing.
Yeah, good.
They actually released one, like, after nobody knowing anything about really the movie for months since they announced it. They showed you like two, like, huh, like, wow, they got, you know, surprised they put that or that character in the trailer. But, and then the early reviews are out. Supposedly, we know absolutely nothing about what we're walking into to see.
All right, we'll have to check it out. Let's see if Eric and Ron Conkham is excited. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, hey, good morning, C-Max.
Good morning, buddy. How are we doing?
Good. I've enjoyed your time off there. But, you know, the problem is that you're not seeing these movies with us, which is why you're not appreciating it.
Oh, I guess that's it. Listen, I love the movie theater experience. Always have. Love going to the movies. Just, I don't know. This one hasn't grabbed me. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little surprised because this would definitely be the movie that grabbed you if there was going to be one. But
all right, I got to revisit my thought process on Deadpool Wolverine. It hasn't jumped. It hasn't really got me yet. But I'll check out the trailer. I saw the Beetlejuice trailer too. I'm excited for Beetlejuice.
Yep. Yeah, between that and the new Alien one and this one, yeah, absolutely. So, but I'm curious about something because I know you've been you brought it up a couple of times in the last prior to your vacation. Did you happen to catch the David Wells interview with Sal and BT yesterday?
I didn't hear the whole interview. I've seen the clips that they put out. Yeah, I saw the thing about Joe Torre and the manager stuff, which I knew from reading Joe Torre's book about the issues he had with Wells and calling him out publicly after one of the games where he was, you know, getting on Jeter or putting his hands up after Jeter made an error or couldn't get to a ball. So like I knew that relationship between them. And then the thing about the Babe Ruth hat and calling BT a yes man. So I saw those two clips, but not the whole interview. No,
not yet. Well, he made a specific comment about not being overly crazy about the use of analytics because of the you know, a lot of times you got to see how the person is performing during the game and not just be a slave to the numbers all the time. You know, so now he brought up the David Cone game, you know, when he came back from the aneurysm. And I guess, I don't remember, you would know better than I would being a Yankee fan. I guess he had a no-hitter going in that game, but they pulled him because of the aneurysm. Now, he did say he could sort of understand that one given the nature of the injury, but he said, you know, as far as many times when someone's pitching a great game, and you know, they might have a low pitch count, but you know, they get to that seventh, eighth inning, and then close to 100, and they're like, well, yank them, you know, because of the, you know, instead of letting them try to finish it for, you know, what it appears to be a good performance. So, I mean, it was interesting to hear because it's not all that long ago.
No. And listen, I appreciate David Wells' comment on it, and we'd all love to see it. Here's the problem I have with it. The reason I disagree with David Wells is he grew up in a different world where, there was some sort of a pitch count by the time the games he's talking about, but for the most part, there wasn't, and they were trained differently. Like, I know this is probably about Paul Skenes because he had the no-hitter into the seventh inning. That's kind of what they were discussing, or at least that's the most recent of the incidents. This guy hasn't been asked to go above 100, well above 100 pitches his entire life in baseball. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to say, because it's some sort of anti-analytic take that we're going to say, what are we going to put? Why, some arbitrary number of 100? I agree the number 100's arbitrary, but it's been arbitrary it's been the arbitrary number he's been dealing with his entire career in baseball. Like, I can't ask a kid who I'm depending on, who I'm hoping has a great career, to suddenly go above and beyond anything he's ever been asked to do and feel comfortable about it. There's just no way.
Well, are we talking about Luis Gil?
No, I mean, not just Luis Gil,
just anybody, right?
Skenes for Pittsburgh. The guy who started started the All-Star game. He had a no-hitter going in the seventh, and they pulled him few weeks back. And it's because they have not been trained for it. They've never been asked to do it. If you want to get into a discussion that the entire analytic department, and I'm sorry, there's just too much noise on the line, Eric. I appreciate your call. If you want to take this thing down and strip it back and revisit how we train starting pitching, sign me up. I'm in. But you can't go through developing a starting pitcher, and it's not just Major League Baseball. It's college. It's high school. It's whenever he really began, or any of these pitchers began their career as a professional baseball player, as someone who had dreams and aspirations that they could become a professional baseball player. They have not been asked to throw 120, 130 pitches. It doesn't exist. They haven't done it their entire lives. Now, I understand that in the moment, there's a chance for something special, but like, it just, I find it hard to believe. I understand why managers are concerned about it. I mean, right? I mean, we blame letting Johan Santana pitch down a no-hitter for the end of his career. And that's 10, 12 years ago. And now it's even worse. They don't let these guys go. The game's become so, compartmentalized. And so, you know, the bullpen is so important. And they bring in these guys throwing 100 miles an hour so early in the game. Like, starting pitchers aren't asked to do it. And I wouldn't feel comfortable suddenly out of nowhere asking a guy to throw 130 pitches because he's got a no-hitter. I get it. It sucks. I'm open to revisiting how we train starting pitching. I'm open to breaking it down to the grassroots of this thing and start training pitchers to throw more pitches and not stopping at the arbitrary number of 100 and take it by feel on any given day. And there'll be some pitchers who are capable of it and some pitchers who aren't, and by, you know, whatever. I'm open to it, but they haven't been asked to do so. It's been a different world. They've been trained differently. And I understand why a manager feels uncomfortable, especially with like Luis Gil or a young kid in Skeens who look like to be the face of the Pittsburgh Pirates franchise. You can't mess with the franchise and ask him to do something for one victory or one moment in the sun, no matter how great it can be. Like, I would feel extremely uncomfortable doing it as a manager and saying, I don't know where this kid's able to be pushed, because we've never pushed him. And I'm not going to push him now on a major league mound. I get it. And so I understand his frustration. It's all of our frustrations. But it's just the way it is. You have to change the way things are done way before he got on that mound that day. It's unfair to just look at it and go, throw analytics out the window and let the man pitch. That's not the discussion. That's changing the discussion. On that given day, it's not necessarily about analytics. It's not some arbitrary number. It's 100. It's what he's been pressed to do his entire career. It's an arbitrary number in the whole building process. They somehow have made 100. That I agree with. Analytics or whatever they've done have targeted 100 as the number. So the way they've built up these pitchers from 15, 16 years old, 100's a arbitrary number. But on the mound that day facing the Milwaukee Brewers or whoever he was playing, the 100 isn't arbitrary in that moment. The 100 is what he's been trained to do and all he's ever been asked to do. And I can't risk his arm, his career, his season for a no-hitter, as much as that sucks.